Ron Van Dam. He's a man ahead of his time, which means he shows up 15 minutes early for everything. It's incredibly annoying. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, right on time on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Okay, all right.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is indeed the Ron Van Dam Show. Thank you so much for being here. You're very nice people. Okay. All right. Okay, fine, whatever. Well, hi. Oh my God, you're looking good today. Nice. Did you have Botox done to your forehead? Looks like it. You look very nice today, except for that little blemish that you have on your chin. And by the way, it's bleeding. Yeah, go check in. Oh my, that is disgusting. I'll tell you a funny story, which is not funny. I was doing my radio show. It was about like 15 years ago, and there was a guest on the show talking about muscle aches and that kind of stuff, some kind of doctor or something. And he had a condition that I'd never seen before. When he talked, the saliva in his mouth started forming little white pus balls in the corner of his lip. It was the most disgusting thing I'd ever seen in my life. The more he talked, the more this little pus ball would start forming in the corner of his mouth. Oh, it was, I felt like just putting a bag over his head. But I don't know if that would have helped. Oh, it was awful. I'm sorry I brought that up. It just reminded me of that. Do you know people that won't shut the hell up no matter what? I know, me too. And I hope they're not listening to the show right now, but I know a couple of people that you just don't know when to shut the hell up. They just talk and talk and talk, and all you can do is say, and you want to, they're friends of yours. Well, not friends. I mean, they're really good acquaintances, and you don't want to insult people. You don't want to just stop them and say, excuse me, you are just not human. Get away from us. Shut the hell up. But you can't do that because you don't want, you know, good people like me, you don't want to insult people. You don't want to make people feel bad. So I'm just nice. I just go, that's interesting. That's what I do. But what I really do is so I feel like saying,
shut up!
Really? And if I were a lady, I would say,
shut up!
They just won't stop talking. They think that everything that they do is intrinsically interesting to everybody else. I got to tell you a story. And then the story goes on like for 17 hours, every little detail. I was wearing socks. I think they were blue socks. I walked into my apartment. It's about six floors up. And sometimes I have to walk. Sometimes take the elevator, but the elevator doesn't always work. So I have to walk up every once in a while. But anyway, let me get on with the story. So I walk into my apartment and I take my shoes off. I usually put them near the front door when I walk in, but this time I might put them somewhere else, and I couldn't find the other shoe. But anyway, that has nothing to do with it. So anyway, so I get into my apartment, and then I notice that, and I put my keys down on the counter in the kitchen. I usually put my keys down on the counter in the kitchen near the, but then if I put them too close to the cutting board where I cut up the vegetables, then sometimes my keys get in the way, and I have to put them a little bit to the side. Anyway, but that has nothing to do with it. So anyway, so I walk into the kitchen, and I put my keys down, and then I turn around, and I'm smelling something odd. I'm smelling something odd all of a sudden, and then I realize, it's nothing. It was some air freshener that I put in there, and I guess it got, I didn't remember that I put air freshener in there, so I just thought that was air freshener, but it was air freshener, but it was of a scent I forgot to put the scent in there. So what I was smelling that I thought was odd, it was just the air freshener that I put in apparently a couple of days ago, but I forgot that I put the air freshener in there. But anyway, that has nothing to do with the story. So anyway, so I'm walking into the place, and then I realize, oh, I have to make an important phone call. I have my phone, I have a house phone. Most people don't. They have cell phones, and that is their regular house phone. They don't have house phones anymore. They know the landlines. I think they call them landlines. I used to call them landmines by mistake, but landmines are completely different than landline. But every once in a while, I used to get that confused. I remember I used to get that confused all the time, especially when they started making the cell phones and I had the landline. And people weren't using the landline anymore. But anyway, that has nothing to do with stories. But anyway, I remember I have to make an important phone call, but I can't remember who I'm supposed to call. That happens every once in a while. Sometimes I'll forget where I put something, and then I say to my friends, like, where do you think I put it? I can't find my keys. And they say, well, where's the last place you put them? And I say, why? If I knew the last place I put them, then that's where my keys would be. You know, and then they say funny things like, you know, it's you know, where are your keys? Well, it's always the last place that you look. Well, of course it's the last place. Why would you keep looking if you found your keys? Of course it's the last place you looked. So, but this has nothing to do with the story. So I remember I got to call somebody. I can't remember who I'm supposed to call. And there could be a number of people that I'm supposed to call, because I call people a lot. I don't know if you know that or not, but I do call people a lot. But it has nothing to do with the story. I do call people a lot. I do. Sometimes I call more people than I should be calling. But I do call people a lot. But anyway, let me get on with the story. I put my purse down on the chair when I usually walk in, and my purse is sitting, and my purse falls over, and everything goes spilling out of the purse. You know, my lipstick, my lip balm, all these things that I put on my lips, and it's so I have to pick it up and put it back into the pocketbook. And I remember that day it was a black pocketbook. I have a black one, and I have kind of like an off tan leather kind of look. But that wasn't the one that I had that day. It was the pocketbook, and it spilled over. So that kind of took my attention away from making that important phone call, but I couldn't remember who I was supposed to call. So I put everything back in my pocketbook, and that was fine. But that has nothing to do with the story, but that took my mind away from who I was supposed to call. So I wasn't really sure who...
Shut up!
That's not an exaggeration. Do you know people like that? I mean, yeah, me too. I know a few people like that. What is it with them? There are only two explanations that I can think of. One is that they don't like silence. They get very, very anxious and very uncomfortable if no one's saying anything. So they have to talk continually in order to fill up the time. That's one explanation. That's more of a psychological explanation. The real explanation, which I believe in, is the fact that these people just think that everything they do is so incredibly interesting to the entire world, and that they can't process anything unless they verbalize it. But they can't verbalize it to themselves. They have to be expounding their words to somebody else for them to hear themselves. And unfortunately, the people that they talk to be able to hear themselves incessantly is you and me. They have to be stopped. They have to be stopped. These people have to know just how annoyingly impossible it is to have a relationship with them because they won't shut up. How do you politely tell somebody that they talk too much and that they just won't shut the hell up? I don't know. I don't know how to do it. So what do you do? What do you do? You avoid them like the plague. And, you know, when there was a plague and it was killing like zillions of people, you wanted to avoid that situation as best you could. So you avoid these people like the, as if they had the plague. Actually, if they had the plague, that would be good because then they wouldn't really be calling you. Or they'd be confined to a room where they'd have to call somebody. Oh, actually, that would be worse. I never found out why this young lady was panicking because she couldn't remember who she was supposed to call. I don't even know if that's the point of the story. I think the point of the story was to tell me that she had a hamburger for dinner last night. I don't know. We didn't get that far. So you have to make up excuses to get people to stop talking rather than to tell them to their face that they're annoyingly ridiculous. So you make up excuses. What I did was I learned the Michael Jackson moonwalk. Do you know what that is? I think I've called it the right thing. Where Michael Jackson, because he was an incredible dancer, I mean, all the little kids knew that. Michael Jackson could all of a sudden, like, I think, moonwalk, and he would go backwards as if his feet weren't even touching the ground. It was a real talent he had. I've learned that. So when I'm talking to somebody face to face and they start gabbing away like that, I start backing up to the point where they can't even realize that I've backed up. First, I'm like maybe about a half a foot away, more than I was before, then a foot away. And then eventually, I'm 17 miles away from them, and they haven't even noticed that. They're still talking. I've left. I've gotten in my car and driven across the country, and they don't even realize I'm not standing there because they're so involved in themselves. Now, you might be saying, Ron, you're talking incessantly right now because it's a talk show. What am I supposed to do? Just sit here and be quiet? No, I have to talk. That's what I'm supposed to do. But you're not supposed to do that. I am. It's funny because some people say, you know, I talk so much, I really should have a talk show, they say. And I say, no, you shouldn't, because what you're saying is just horribly, it's not interesting to anybody. Nobody. To the point where people are avoiding you. That's what I should tell them, you know. Are you wondering why?
No, people love me.
Oh, no, they don't. They say they love you, but they don't because they don't know how to tell you that you won't shut up. Sorry, man. You know, I had to get that off of my chest. Why is it on my chest? Why, if something is bothering me, is it on my chest? I don't feel anything on my chest. So why did I have to get it off of it? Some people don't use the, well, I had to get that off my chest. Sometimes they say, well, I had to get that out of my head. That makes more sense. Those are thoughts that are stuck in your skull. So you got to get those out. But what are your thoughts doing in your chest? Sometimes I'm so disturbed by something, I just have to get it off of my crotch. Wow, Ron, I like that. I was so bothered by that, I just had to get it out of my ass. That even makes more sense. But then there are phrases that wouldn't make sense. I was so bothered by that, I had to get it off of my ankles. No, that doesn't work. But the chest does? It makes no sense. I'm sorry. Anyway, how about, it bothered me so much I had to get it out of my toes. How about... Okay, sorry. I do have an extended interview today, and my guest will be joining us momentarily. But before we join the guest, it's commercial time. You know how this works. Yep. You know, there are a lot of disgusting names for stores. What do you do about something like that? Well, one guy is fixing it.
Hello, I'm Dick Mulligan III, owner of Big Dick's Huge Sausage. My grandpa Richard Mulligan opened Big Dick's Huge Sausage back in the 50s with the intention of bringing local folks good food based around custom-crafted sausages made right here in our area. He wanted to be sure people got the most bang for their family buck by filling their bellies, and he wanted to do it maybe with a little bit of a wink, because back then, people could take a joke. Recently, it's been brought to my attention through Yelp reviews and Facebook posts and Twitters and Insta-whatevers that some people are offended by our name and some of our menu items and how we do business. So in the spirit of, well, not having to listen to that, we will be making some changes here at Big Dick's Huge Sausage. First off, we're changing the name. Big Dick's Huge Sausage is now Mulligan's Sausages and More. And that "and more" thing is because several people, including Patty CZU1754, felt the need to call out the fact that we also do hot dogs and burgers and fries and chicken sandwiches and onion rings, you know, like so many restaurants do, but apparently Patty CZU1754 and Mr. Twister 27, among others with a lot of free time, feel it's false advertising to only say sausages, so fine. We'll also be changing the name of some menu items. The Little Dick Hot Dog, which again is custom crafted for us by a butcher here in our area, will now just be called a hot dog on the kids' menu. Our Big Sack of Fries is now just a bag of French fries. And our best-selling hardwood-grilled 14-inch long hot Italian sausage, which you cannot get anywhere else around here, will no longer be called the Throat Buster, nor will a staff member offer to hold it for you while you eat it with no hands. And finally, and quite honestly, this is a change I should have made years ago. We will no longer dispense condiments like mayonnaise and mustard out of hollowed-out dildos. That was my dad's idea. He was not entirely right in the head. Mulligan Sausages and More, we're changing with the times. I hope to see you soon, unless your Patty sees you 1754.
Hello, Greg.
Hi, Ron. How you doing?
I'm great. Greg Salzer joins us now. He's a certified life coach, a seeker, and a traveler. I don't know if the seeker and traveler is spiritual or actually physical, but we'll find out. Probably both. Right. Well, yeah, welcome to the program. What you've done here is very interesting. What we're doing is we're talking about a book that's been released that he has penned called 27 Questions to Make You Sweat. It's a workout guide for the soul. You don't get books like this very frequently. They're kind of interesting. It's a deeper look into yourself, and as a life coach and such, I understand where you're coming from. How did you decide to write a book like this, though, for the general public?
You know, that's a great question. And someone just asked me that, Ron. It started, I've been meditating for a long time, and I do these long retreats, and I'd been at this long retreat. It's a 10 days of silence, and I had this idea for this dating book, because I just got divorced, and I started dating again. Uh-huh. And so I had all these questions, because dating after you've been married, you know, and I'm not a kid.
Yeah.
So I had all these crazy ideas, and then I told my mom about it, and she sent me an article like 2 weeks after I told her I was going to start working on this book of questions about dating. And she sent this article from the New York Times. Some psychiatrist had sort of already written it. It was like 36 questions to, you know who, if you can be with this person or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made me think, okay, I mean, I like the concept of questioning, And then I sort of turned it on to, I said, okay, forget the dating. Let's just, how about just questions about what it means to be here? Because ever since I've been a kid, my dad was an analyst, and he was a very curious human being. He was also pretty nutty and crazy and lost his mind and all his money. But he was very curious. And when I was a younger man, I was extremely confrontational. Like, I really liked getting into things. And finally, I realized, you know what? Why don't I just put them down in a book where people can be confronted, and they don't have to be, I don't have to be so confrontational with them. They can, you know, be confronted on their own time.
Interesting. In my mind, there are two kinds of people roaming the earth. There are people that work all day, drink beer, and just talk about sports. And then there's the people who have a deep soul, who are always looking inward, looking for the meaning of how to be better, how to improve, why you're here. And they ask those deeper questions of themselves, and they even do it in conversation with others. I think there's a fine line between the two. And I, from what I get from your book, is you're trying to say to those that may not have that deeper connection that there is one, go discover it.
Exactly. And I'd love you to say that, Ron, because that, like, I'm really trying to reach normal people. Very similar thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm, because look, we've all heard it. I've been in that yoga spiritual community for a very long time, and it's, you know, and it's like, it's preaching to the choir. I mean, when you preach to the choir, they go, yeah, that sounds amazing.
Exactly.
But I want to talk to the guys that are just watching football, drinking beer, that don't really talk to their girlfriends about much, because I do know that generally women do seem to care a little more about the deeper emotional things.
No question.
And I do know when a guy can connect to them emotionally, they're generally more into it. I mean, but just as much as I say that, you know, I'm also surrounded by a lot of very wealthy ladies where I live who are all married, who dig the guy that can talk about the deep stuff, but they like the guy with the bread.
Yes. Well, you know, you can kind of have both sometimes, actually.
I agree.
Yeah, and that's okay. But to lack the inner understanding is not right. Anyway, the book kind of just opens it up and says, well, how about this? How do you feel about this? And you're actually basically having a deeper conversation with somebody without being there, which is kind of interesting in a sense. What are some of the...
Go on.
No answer.
No, I was just going to say, because I think that it's... I think it helps the planet, and it helps all of us grow.
Yes.
If we ask, I mean, I just had an interview with this guy who's really fun. He's from Virginia, and he's like, "But Greg, I must be shallow because I never ask these questions. Who cares?" And I was like, "Well, you know, who cares if you just think it's okay to let things go on as they have? I mean, you know, when I think about things in the world that have changed, they've changed because people question them.
Yes.
And they go, I'm not so sure this is right. Right. You know, then that, I mean, how else do we get to a new space of understanding unless we go deep?
Well, it's like love. You can't love somebody else until you love yourself. You can't open up a deep channel with somebody unless you've opened it up with yourself first. Yeah. Let's talk about, there's 27 questions, you know, who's counting? 27 questions. give me an example of some of these questions and how they may just open you up.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give one that I think is actually one of the hardest ones in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, are you an addict? And how long would you stay with someone that's an addict?
Oh.
I think that's a really hard question.
It is.
Because I know in my life, in my own personal life, between my father and two half-sisters, all hardcore addicts.
Yeah.
And then I just look around with my life. I mean, I know there's addicts everywhere, and it's hard. And the harder question is, how long would you stay with someone who's an addict? Because, I mean, Ron, it's hard, man. I mean, it's when you have someone in your life that you care about, you know, it's just, and I'm not giving an answer per se, but I am saying, if you can look at yourself first, that helps everyone.
You know, it's interesting. That's a tough question, and I'll tell you why I couldn't really answer that. Is yes, you do care about the other person. It's good nature to to hang in there and care for somebody else. But then you start to put yourself into jeopardy sometimes when that all that negativity and all that struggle starts to eat away at you to the point where you're not who you were or who you are. And that's a real tough question. Do you destroy yourself in the name of somebody else? I don't know. That's rough.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the reason I brought that up is because I do think that that is actually one of the most difficult things, because we all think if we're being a good person, but I love her. I've got to stick in there with her. But the thing is, the thing about addicts is that they are not changing until they decide. And actually, the crazy sort of irony and oxymoron is that generally, the shorter you deal with an addict, the less tolerance you have.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about being harsh and mean, but the less tolerance, the more you're making them fess up and look inside and have to decide what's more important, you know, my addiction or my relationships.
True. It's true. I used to do a lot of Reiki. And part of that was basically to take the negative energy out that's been fed to you by other negative people. You withdraw that and you fill yourself with positive energy, and that's how you become the best you can be. But when something is draining your positive energy and feeding you negative continually, you have to stop and you have to think about that.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, when it's someone that you care about and love deeply, I think the hardest is like a parent and a child. I mean, how do you say no to your kid? How do you slam the door?
Wow.
The truth is, I think it's actually helping them if you can do that.
Yeah. It sounds like Sophie's Choice here. That's kind of weird. All right, let's not go there. Give me another example of something that would be searchable within one.
Okay, well, I guess another one that I love, just because I love talking about capitalism and economics, is the question, when is enough money enough?
There you go. That's a rough one.
I mean, it's a rough one because we live in a free market capitalist system that says, oh, you need to let people make as much, they need to be motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I mean, at what point, when your toilet paper holder is gold plated, you know, I mean, at what point does it get kind of ridiculous? You need 7 homes? Really? You need 2 jets? Okay, you know, maybe 1 is enough. I mean, seriously, at what point do we go, okay, we live on a planet, we share it with everyone. I just think it's worth asking. As I say, in my dream world, I'm a big believer in capitalism because capitalism allows human beings to be who they are. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. We need that.
That's a goal.
But I also think we need human beings with a mind and a heart that are connected to say, okay, what's the number? Like, after this number, can we say all the money is going to go to help the planet? And I think the number, and I think I'm being very liberal, I think after $500 million, we can say, you can make as much as you want, but we're going to take that money and we're going to educate people. We're going to house people. We're going to help people. You know, I mean, I think $500 million is enough to live, don't you think?
I do, too. You've almost described the difference between Bloomberg and Trump, but I'm not going to go there. No, that's a very good point. I mean, money gives us security. We're taught that, and it allows us to grow and not to stress. I get that, but at what point, you're absolutely right. At what point is this superficial and serves really very little purpose beyond that? It's our definition of goals, isn't it?
Right. And I just want to say, I mean, I've been fortunate to be with, you know, a few billionaires in my life. And when you're actually I've been on the inner circle of the billionaires, what they'll admit to you, money's not money to them anymore. It's pure ego. This is how powerful I am. And I've always thought, really, dude, you have $1 billion and you're not giving your gardener a $10,000 friggin' tip for Christmas?
Exactly.
Like, why aren't you doing that? You're changing his life.
Yeah,
but instead it's like, no, I got, like, you know, it just bums me out.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely true. Absolutely true. Well, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff in this book. It's 27 questions to make you sweat, a workout guide for the soul. I like that connection. It's fascinating, and it's kind of important, really, in a sense, especially with the way our world is right now. You need to get your feet back on the ground and start wearing those shoes.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because that's what I feel. I feel like the world we're in right now, we're slowly getting into this world where truth is becoming this malleable. Truth's not that malleable.
No kidding.
You know what I mean? Like, that's snow, this is the ground, that's an airplane. It's not an alternative fact. That's not a bathtub, it's an airplane. It's not an alternative fact. Yeah.
Well,
it gets weird.
Yeah,
it's a concept of alternative fact. Yeah. It's surreal to me. How do you even say that?
Because it's a snake oil sales job. That's what it is. It's in order to make you feel and do certain things.
Right.
And it sounds like from your upbringing that you don't want to be told what to do. You know what it is. You know, you reach a certain age in life.
Right.
I talk about this all the time. You reach a certain age in life, and you know what's going on. You know what you like. You know what you don't like. You should know who you are by a certain point.
We hopefully keep growing. But, you know, I mean, I do know it really what kind of hurt me and freaked me out about that whole, I'm not harping on this alternative fact thing, but the fact that the media didn't just go, there's no such thing as an alternative fact. It's called BS.
I know.
But instead everyone's like, well, that's an interesting way of seeing it. It's not interesting. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
You know what I mean? Like, how do you give that credence?
Yeah.
We need to be more honest and real. Let's just be real. I don't want to kill you. But I do want to call you out on BS.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important. You know what I mean? Like,
it is.
That to me is being, you know, that's being a real person. And we need more of that. We just need more people just saying, "Hey, man, this is what's really happening."
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say you can't shove the toothpaste back into the tube. I say, yeah, you can. You can with the proper funnel. You can. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Look at that. Ron talking some truth. I like it.
Yeah. Right. All right. And this is what I'm talking about. See, I could talk to you for hours and hours because this is real. This is real conversation. This is about, it's about people. It's about your feelings. And I'm telling you, man, if you haven't done this or you don't do this, do it, because that's what it's all about. And you very quickly learn that. 27 questions to make you sweat. Greg Sulzer, is there a website we can visit?
Yes, you can visit. You can visit my website, which is gwscoaching.com, and you can also visit my Instagram page. It's just Greg Sulzer.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to Amazon and find the book on Amazon.
Perfect. Hey, thank you so much for your time. It's been great, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Thank you so much, Ron.
All right, take care.
I really appreciate it. Thanks. Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, thank you to my guest, and thank you to you for being here. Hey, guess what? I'll be back again tomorrow with a program. Yeah. Yeah, it'll happen. So please join me then, but until that time arrives, I wish you peace.